This episode of Outlander Cast is brought to you by Caswell Massey, America's original purveyor of fragrance. And remember, for 20% off any purchase, just go to caswellmassey.com and use the coupon code OutlanderCast at checkout.
Uncle, you can this old kit.
Never thought I'd lay eyes on you again. How? What brought you here?
We came in search of settlers. Of land. 3 days north. This is Jerry's son, Ian. Ian. This is Murta. My godfather.
Fine lad. Drives a hard bargain.
Uncle Jamie told me all about your adventures together.
There's so much to tell you.
I want to hear every word.
Now, what are you calling an old coot, eh?
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Starz. Everybody, and how's it going? Are you still smiling? Because I'm still smiling. And I think we all know why we're smiling. But in case you don't know me, hi, I'm your new friend. My name's Mary. We like the same things.
Smiling's my favorite.
Including Outlander and Murta.
Hashtag spoiler alert.
Whatevs.
My name's Blake, and I never would have paid 21 shillings for a stupid bit horse bit.
Listen, otherwise you're going to have to sleep at that lady's house with a pie.
Oh my God. Who the heck
Crazy
is that
town.
Lady?
Well, before we get into the rest of this show, we of course want to remind you that you could follow Outlander Cast and subscribe to the podcast. You could find us Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, basically anywhere these days. Just search the title Outlander Cast. And of course, we would love for you to become an official member of the Outlander Cast clan. Just visit OutlanderCastClan.com. There you get great benefits, extras, special after doc podcast
That's
episodes.
My girl.
I got you, Bew. Boy.
Bew. Boy.
I don't even know. I don't even know. I was so proud.
You missed them.
I was so proud of myself.
You gave me a boy and a boo in the same one.
I'll give you it all. Plus, you're going to get tons of fun stuff.
Are you going to give me pie? That's the real question.
I've been baking cookies. You want me to? You don't even like pie.
I like pie.
No, you don't. What kind
of
pie?
I like
you
pecan
like chocolate.
Pie.
Do you really?
I like pecan pie with all the brown sugar.
Just press.
I like apple pie.
Let's get into this. No, you don't.
I like apple pie.
You haven't eaten a single apple pie that I've brought to this house or made.
That is beside the point.
Let's just get into the show. All right, so break it on down. Give me the episode details. Sans pie hussy.
Pie Well, this episode was entitled Savages. It's an obvious reference to the Cherokee and the outlook of about Native Americans at this time. But I think it's also a clear reference to your boy, Air Mueller, and how that savages...
You just said my boy?
Yeah, he's your boy.
No, he's not.
He's your
Please
boy.
Please don't. No.
You were smiling when he was on TV, when he first showed up.
No, I wasn't.
More a little bit.
I was smiling because there was a baby.
Well, either way, I think it's a reference to him and the fact that a savage is... That is all...
I need you to do something on YouTube for me for a moment.
What's that?
I need you to go to YouTube.
Okay.
And I need you to pull up Savages, Pocahontas. Because that is all I thought about when I found out the title of this with this episode. And then when I saw it, when the scalp was revealed, this was honestly all I was thinking. I was like, me and anyone else who like loved Pocahontas, this is the song that we now have in our heads.
Here it is.
Hellish head, They're only good when dead. They're vermin, as I said, and worse.
They're savages, savages.
Barely even human.
Savages, savages.
Drive them from our shore. They're not like you and me.
So these are the settlers.
We must sound the drums of war, they're savages.
So of course the settlers feel like the Native Americans are savages, but then we go into the Native American camp, and they too think the people are savages. They think the settlers are savages. Here we go.
This is what we feared. The paleface is a demon. The only thing they feel at all is greed.
That's my favorite line.
Beneath that milky hide, there's emptiness inside.
I wonder if they even bleed. They're savages, savages.
So, see, it's just like people don't understand each other, calling each other savages, and that's all I was thinking when I saw that scalp. Savages.
Dude.
So I apologize for any of you who aren't huge Disney fans, who haven't necessarily watched Pocahontas. Maybe you didn't own the CD and play it on repeat many times while dancing around your kitchen as a child. but if you are my friend and you do understand these references, welcome to the club.
I got like sweats from the amount of nerdness.
Savages.
That is a deep cut nerd reference.
No!
You got two nerds for that.
So I think that's why actually they named this episode Savages, because it reminded them of that scene from Pocahontas.
Hey, here is a
I'm
funny,
joking.
No, of course you are. Here's a fun bit of trivia, unrelated to Outlander, but mm-hmm. Pocahontas. Disney was developing two animated features at the same time, one being Pocahontas and the other being The Lion King. And they thought that Pocahontas was going to be actually Best Picture, because the year prior, Beauty and the Beast went up for Best Picture.
Yes.
And they were like, they put all their money and all of their best animators and everything into Pocahontas.
And they were like,
they even got Mel Gibson. And then they were like, yeah, we got Ferris Bueller for Lion King. Don't worry about it. It's going to be fine.
That will be for like, the boys will like the Lion King. The girls will like Pocahontas. Oh, actually, the boys will like Pocahontas too, because there's fighting. Everybody's going to like Pocahontas. Nobody's going to really want to watch about a lion. And then what happened? Opposite. Disney, because you gotta stop making scary Disney movies. And I'm gonna give a shout out to Ann Gavin loves Hunchback of Notre Dame. I'm telling you, they went through a dark phase, Pocahontas and Hunchback of Notre Dame, and then they were like, oh, never mind, people like furry little creatures. They like the Lion King,
thus the Lion King.
There you go.
They're not making a live action Pocahontas like they are the Lion King, I'll tell you that.
All right.
So anyway, the writer was Bronwyn Garrity. Now, you definitely do not know who Bronwyn Garrity is, because unless you are a good friend of hers, because I didn't know who Bronwyn Garrity was. She's actually a relatively new writer, and this is actually her first episode of Outlander. She's also written on the miniseries Flesh and Bone that is also on Stars, as a matter of fact. She served as a story editor, and she wrote one episode. And she's also written for that show Under the Dome. And she also has written for a show called The Returned on A&E. And one episode of Grey's Anatomy back in 2013.
She's a very interesting profile pic on Twitter.
It's very emo.
Very emo.
Very emo.
Yeah. With a sun flare.
So the director is, her name is Denise DeNovi. And for those of you who are serious movie nerds, you actually probably do know this name. She was actually mainly a producer who, oddly enough, has worked a ton with Dan Fogelman. Now, that is a name that is important because he's the creator of the show This Is Us. She has worked with him on movies like Danny Collins and Crazy Stupid Love, but she's also produced other movies like Focus, The Best of Me, Knights in the Rodanthe, The Sisterhood of Traveling Pants 1 and 2, Catwoman, but the really bad one with Halle Berry, and A Walk to Remember, which also happens to star...
I almost remember Mandy Moore.
And she's also...
It was late afternoon.
Been the producer on The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, I love that.
And she's also a producer on Batman Returns. She's very well known within the Hollywood community, but she actually also has 4 directing credits. And this is a relatively new direction for Denise DeNovi. She started directing in 2017. She's directed episodes of Bones, Sneaky Pete on Amazon, mm-hmm. and also a movie that looks actually really terrible called Unforgettable. it stars Rosario Dawson and Katherine Heigl.
Yikes.
It's like, it does not look good. But anyways, this is a pretty unique situation.
I agree.
A very unique situation. And the DP was Alistair Walker. Now, Mary.
Yes.
I'm just going to go ahead and say that I think your kilt rating is probably a 3.5.
Oh, it's so low. Probably the lowest ever. Joke, guys. 5 kilts. Give them all the 5 kilts. Right. How about you, Blake?
I'm giving this one a 4.8.
Which pretty much is a 5.
Essentially.
Yeah.
This episode, I think, was great for one specific reason.
The fact that you were singing Savages in your mind from Pocahontas?
No, that was not me. That was...
No!
You get the nerd cred for that one. The great reason, I think, is because of the emotionality behind our characters' departures and their arrivals.
Like when they wanted pie?
Like when they wanted pie.
Kidding.
But
I'll be serious. I got my serious face on.
No, like, it's okay. It's okay. We gotta have fun. This isn't the listener feedback episode, okay? That's agenda free. This one is a little bit more focused. But there's some logic questions I have about this episode that I want to get into with you. But what's your GBG?
Okay, my GBG is the whole montage of Claire tending to the land. Drums of Autumn has a very special place in my heart, mm-hmm. because I love the simplicity of the hard times that people had to go through when they had to, you know, live off the land and everything. So I just loved it, man. You just want to give Claire a high five because that knitting she's done is pretty dang good. Good job, Claire. But just tending to the animals, all of it. Love it. My bad was seeing the scalp.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to cry. I wanted to vomit. It is hard to rewatch. I mean, they did a great job of sandwiching the sadness and the hardship in the middle of happy things. In this episode, you're like, yay, I love this episode. Oh, my God, I forgot. This is really hard to watch. And then it's really hard. I'll talk about it in a second. But needless to say, I want to cry and vomit at the same time. It just makes me so, so sad. Mm-hmm. And then the great was obviously Murtaugh and his return. Plus, a little shout out to the tear in Jamie's eye when they're chatting. Like, the light just caught it so perfectly.
Tear.
It doesn't come down, but it's just perfectly formed. So, I mean, everything about Murtaugh. I love. Okay, how about you? What was your GBG?
All right, so the good for me, there's this great scene of Frau Mueller as she's walking out of her cabin as it's on fire. And then because of, you know, all the arrows from the Cherokee and everything. But for some reason, that shot, the whole sequence, really, it's really stuck with me. Just seeing the arrows be lit up and then flying in the night sky, the music and then the arrows hitting the house and Frau Mueller walking out of the house. It just felt like a horror movie almost.
Yes, I agree.
And then Gerhard Mueller running down and then he's, oh my God, looking at his wife, she's all burned up, and then he gets hit with the arrows, and then boom, boom, all the music stops and it's just him and he falls and he dies, and you see the Cherokee like own it and say, that this is what you get, this is what you get. And I thought that was a very intriguing sequence. One of the most intriguing sequences for the whole episode.
I agree.
Visually,
as sad as it was
beautiful. Visually, emotionally.
I do just have an issue. How did the doll catch on fire?
Yeah.
Okay, that part could have been kept out. Like, I was fine with the doll being in the foreground and seeing the burning house, but then being shot back to the doll and the doll was suddenly on fire.
Yeah,
it's so far away from the house.
That was like one of those moments where, like, you got the good scene. It's like a painter. Okay, you got the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
Leave it alone.
Just don't touch
don't
it.
Don't do that last stroke.
Just okay? Don't.
They, I feel like they couldn't help themselves. You had the perfect shot with the doll and the house burning in
flames.
It was
great.
And you went one too many strokes.
You're like, what if we burn the doll? Even though it's nowhere near the house. Let's
it would have
that.
Been even better had the doll not burned. I don't know. It is what it is.
Yep.
That it is what it's not. This is not a bad. This is a good. Okay. We're not here to write a better show. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're not here to write a better show. The bad is a tie for me. The random horny silversmith's wife. WTF. Is this a hussy 2.0? This is a hussy 2.0.
Yes.
I'm out on the hussy 2.0.
Oh yeah, she needs to go away.
But my actual bad is killing off Adawihi. You know, I get why it happened.
You said that in an interesting way.
Isn't that how you say it? Adawihi?
I thought it was more of like Adawihi.
Adawihi? I don't know.
They changed her name from the name in the book, too.
Okay, so we'll call her Cherokee Grandma, okay?
No, the healer.
Well, whatever it is, I understand why they killed her off. I get it, because I felt that death, even though we've only had like less than 10 minutes of interaction between both.
She's just such a good actress. You're like, I just love you.
I know.
I love you.
And it perfectly, for me, highlighted all the craziness of Mueller and how it played, you know, in direct contrast from what the pastor was saying about him. Like, he's gone crazy. Like, I feel like this was a in quotes, good death. But I wish we could have had
What do you mean a good death?
Like it served the story.
You mean it had impact. Yeah, yes, it was impactful. Okay.
Yeah, but I wish we could have had some more time with Shee and Claire, which, I mean, I suppose is a testament to how good the writing is when mm-hmm. you can be that upset and shocked from a character death that you barely
You've
even
had
knew.
Like 3 minutes with, exactly.
Yeah, it reminded
yes.
me of Elias Pound a little bit.
Yes.
We had more time with him, but when you saw that scalp, you were like, oh.
I mean, it did its job, and I think that that's the power of not only the acting, but like you said, the writing
right.
and the visualization and the depth that they were able to have in this conversation between Shee and Claire, just like Elias. You know what I mean? It's even though it's short, it was impactful.
Right, and I think you got from that relationship what you needed to feel that impact. Could mm-hmm. you have? Could you have gotten more from both of them? Yeah, probably. You probably could have, and there's probably a little bit more detail there. But I think when you boil it down, you got what you needed.
Yes.
To feel the impact. And my great is also a tie. The scene with Bree at the end, and oh. that simple camera trick of spinning around the rock.
Can we please go to Scotland? Oh,
I know.
Gorgeous.
I really do want to go. And but again, that simple camera trick. With the light and how it goes around the rock and it comes back out and you see the light again. And it's just something as simple as having Sophie Skelton go up to the rock, you know, have her step to the side, the camera wraps around, and there's nothing there. But it continues this tradition that Outlander has of having somebody go in the past in an extremely interesting way. And the last time we saw someone go in the past is when Claire gets into the cab, she sees the puddle, she steps into the puddle, mm-hmm. and it's the puddle from the 1700s,
yes.
right? I love that. But the real great for me was, again, the emotionality of having Murtaugh back. It's exactly mm-hmm. what this show needs on a character level, on a narrative level, on a relationship level. But it, not only that, it's the emotional conflict that we
That's
now
it.
Have
That's it.
Of having Murtaugh and Jamie on what you could consider opposing sides.
So Murtaugh, of course, in the books, does not come back, guys. He dies at Culloden. So for us to now have him here and now be a regulator, it's huge conflict. Like, I'm loving this. I'm sad because part of me just wants to say, Murtaugh, no. Just move on in. There's plenty of room in that cabin that got completely furnished and done in 2 months or whatever. You know, Jamie will build you a new house in a day. But on the flip side, as you said, there's now beautiful to watch conflict
right.
between Godfather and Godson.
And real conflict, mm-hmm. too. A real emotional that conflict that's tied into the narrative.
And Murtaugh doesn't even know the future of the states yet.
Right. He has no idea what's going to happen. So, like, there's this real pull, and it's a real choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real choice that Murtaugh has to make. It's not coincidence that this played out so well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real choice. You have two real options. Go with Jamie and live with your godson and be happy, or stay with the regulators mm-hmm. and fight for your rights. And it's like, either way, something, you know, that sucks is going to happen. And either way, something that's really good is going to happen. That's when you have, and you can tie it into the narrative, that's when the writing is spectacular. And it's the absolute right choice. You can tell that they were planning it all the way back in season 3 because they knew they were going to get season 4. And they said, we can make this choice.
Yes.
It sucks to not have Murta in season three, but it's going to pay off very well in season four.
Gosh.
And it was the right
choice.
So
good. I honestly haven't been able to stop smiling except when it's the sad parts.
Right. So I like the reunion of it all.
Agreed.
But I like the problem that it proposes for both Murta and Jamie. And while I do think it's a little convenient that Murta just happens to be in South Carolina in this... North Carolina in this little village that Jamie is going to, and it just happens to be the blacksmith, and it just happens to be that the horse bit breaks and they need a blacksmith. I get all that, and it's a coincidence. It's convenient, but I've also accepted the fact that coincidences like this happen within the framework of Outlander's universe. Mm-hmm. It just happens.
Right.
Because the story needs it. And somebody tried once to argue with me that it's like the work of the gods,
mm-hmm.
that these things collide,
mm-hmm.
and they break apart and then they collide again, that it surrounds the Frasers. I don't know if I buy that.
You don't have to buy that. Everyone's entitled to their own perception,
right,
of Outlander.
But I accept the fact that it happens within the framework of Outlander's universe. And I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it going forward.
You know what I'm okay with?
What?
That I wasn't okay with at first was the fact that Murta could still remember the tune to the Boogie
Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy?
Yeah. But then I was like, then again, he and Claire did that performance so many times,
right,
that he probably is like, I don't know what's worse, having this dang song stuck in my head or having to be an indentured slave. And that was such a cute little throwback. Did anyone else enjoy that? The little whistling?
Yeah. As much as I hated the search, it was bittersweet to hear it.
That was like, now I'm going to go back, and when I rewatch The Search, I'm going to be like,
oh.
Murta.
So Murta is back.
Yeah.
What? How? Let's just get it out of the way.
Silver Fox.
How are we feeling?
Oh my God. So excited. I love the hug between he and Jamie.
Oh.
I was ready for Jamie to faint like he did when Claire showed up, but he didn't. I loved his little sass between Ian. And then, gosh, the hug between he and Claire. I mean, all of it.
Right.
I loved when he told Jamie, I want to hear every word. They know there's so much to tell you.
Oh, I know. And that's why we played it at the beginning of this episode. It's unavoidable. You have to play it. You have to. Otherwise, you're doing this whole episode an injustice.
Yes.
But I'd say one of my favorite parts of the whole episode is actually a kind of nondescript thing, and I want to get your opinion on it, my darling, which is this. When we are introduced to Murta for the first time, mm-hmm. as viewers, we see this super long shot of his back, and you just see him silver-haired, and you know, we're looking at it from Ian's perspective. And finally, he gets revealed that it's Murta, and he turns around, and we see it. We already know as viewers who he is, which was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Even hearing his voice, you kind of understood who it was. If you're a super Outlander nerd.
Which, be real,
if you're listening to this, you're a super Outlander nerd. So
you may not be a Pocahontas nerd,
no.
But you're an Outlander nerd.
So that being said, I found it interesting that...
Interesting, eh?
That Jamie got the same treatment. We essentially saw Jamie's perspective just before Jamie did, right?
Correct.
He walked in, saw his back, and said, hey, what are you doing? Like, he's charging this kid 21 chilies. What are you talking about? And Murta had his back to him. I found that interesting, and I wanted to get your opinion on it. Do you think that was something that they did purposely?
Of course they did it purposefully.
Yeah, like, meaning like, you know, we... meaning like did they have a real intent to, like, we had this perspective, and they filmed it so knowing that we had that perspective that Jamie has, mm-hmm. when he is currently saying, hey, what are you doing? I just find
that
to be
interesting. No, but I liked it because we actually got to see, when Jamie was yelling at him, you actually saw it from, you saw Murta's face.
Right.
And so you got to see him as he had like that moment of like, wait a second, I know that voice. Hold on, I know that voice, but it's been 20 years. Oh my God, I know that voice.
Right.
It's Jamie. So you got to see all of that emotion. And then when he turned around, the mirrored emotion in a different form on Jamie's face was, gosh.
That is just his mouth dropping. Like,
Sam Heughan's like minuscule acting that he yep. does in his face, where he tells his muscles, like, okay, top muscle of my lip and eyebrow, go. You know, he's really been blowing it out of the water.
I give him a lot of credit. He's really grown.
Yes.
If you like, you look back to his like season one days.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh.
Ever since season three, I mean, yes. really, he's a phenomenal actor no matter what. But you can tell that he's really just perfected this craft, knowing that the camera is so focused on his face. We're obviously all looking at his face because he's Bonnie. Yeah,
how could you not be?
But still, he's been the face acting has just gone up in such a level.
Right, I totally agree. And there was actually another thing that I wanted to point out too. And I remember when we were watching this, you kind of laughed at it because it was like kind of weird. There was a point where there was a side shot between Jamie and Murta, mm-hmm. and they're in the pub. And Jamie tells Ian to you know, take a hike, and there's this side shot of Murta,
yep.
and Jamie says, Claire came back to me, and Murta, like, the side shot happens, and Murta, like, leans in and, like, puts his hand on the table.
Hand down, like, you have got to be kidding right? me, that is amazing.
But it just shows him. Like, it just shows his reaction. Then all mm-hmm. of a sudden, Jamie's face enters the picture. They both lean into each other, and they're talking about Claire, and their yes. relationship is finally reconnected. There's this whole moment of, like, they're both in the picture at the same time.
Yep.
Right? Okay, so it was an interesting shot, and I remember thinking, wow, that's how they shot it. Like, that's awkward how they did it. Like, it was just Murta, and then all of a sudden, he put his hand down and, like, and then Jamie just comes into the picture. I thought it was a weird shot. Right?
I liked it.
Well, upon further review, I kind of like it too. And I'll tell you why. Because there's a companion shot later on. Mm-hmm. After the meeting, you know, when Murta gives this whole spiel about the regulators and we're going to stand together and everything, and everybody signs their names to the piece of paper saying that they're going to join the movement or stand together, whatever it is. Jamie comes up at the end of the line along with Ian tagged along, and Murta says, listen, why don't you join me? Mm-hmm. Like, let's do this together. We'll work together. And Jamie gives this thing about, like, listen, I can't. I can't in good conscience do that. And it gets back to that same side shot, right?
That's okay. The part that I've, like, kind of zoned out a little bit.
I know.
Because I don't love the conflict.
Well, it gets even further, right?
Oh, dear.
So the same side shot is there, but instead of, they've switched positions, okay?
Yeah.
So Jamie is on the left, and now Murta's on the right. It's a mirrored shot.
Yeah.
Here's another interesting thing that happens. When
again with the interesting, Blake.
Wait, when Jamie says, no, listen, I can't do it, and he says, oh, well, you know, and Murta says something along the lines of, like, yeah, you got your family and you got this to worry about. And then he says, you've also got your land. And then as he finishes the word land, he pulls out of the shot. He pulls away from Jamie.
Oh.
And Jamie is the only one that's left within the frame. So we have this mirroring moment of when they're on one side, Jamie comes into the frame mm-hmm. for that one shot earlier in the episode, and then later on in the episode, when their relationship seems to take a turn, Murta leaves the frame. And it's just an interesting
wow.
shot, right? So I'm kind of in on that. In okay. on that whole sequence.
I just loved the hand motions because, you know, when you're just so excited and that was, I feel like, Murta's version of get out.
Stop it.
Claire's here too. Oh my goodness gracious.
So I wanted to go over too, I think, like, what the deal is. Like, so Murta is, he claims that he's not a leader of the regulator movement. He says that they don't have any leaders. But it seems like he is, if he's not a leader, he is at least an organizer.
No joke. I'm going to need a history episode on the regulators.
We are actually working on it.
Good.
As we speak, as a matter of fact,
because
I'm working on it.
I don't know. It's not doing it for me right now, guys. Can I be real with you? There was enough tension between the Native Americans and the settlers. And then now I'm just sad that Murta's on, like, this team that I'm cool with because I'm like, I got you. Let's kick these British out.
Yeah.
You know, but on the flip side, now you're against Jamie, which is really awkward. So I've kind of like distancing myself from this area of the plot, which I know is silly because I know it's going to play a big part.
Yeah.
But I need a history lesson.
And I would say that the boiled down version, like the extremely boiled down version of this,
yes,
is that there were these guys who owned these lands,
yep,
and they were pissed off at Governor Tryon because of the taxes that he was collecting from them. But Governor Tryon was also doing it in a way that was kind of deceitful. He was purposely undermining these people, and he was purposely taking extra money away and giving it to all of his buddies.
Shame.
And they just couldn't, they couldn't take it anymore, and that's how the regulators began.
Gotcha. So basically, Murtaugh is like Robin Hood.
Well, he's not stealing. He's just saying, I'm not going to pay an exorbitant amount of taxes, which is why you're finding that even though Jaime is saying, hey, you can have 100 acres of land and I'm not even going to charge you rent for it, but when I won't charge you rent until it becomes fruitful. Mm-hmm. And these guys here are afraid because, listen, we've done all this. We've gone through this before. We busted our balls left and right to make a good product, to make a good farm, only to be taxed beyond like even comprehension, and we lost everything. So it doesn't matter if you're giving us the land for free until it becomes fruitful. Governor Tryon's gonna take the vig, and he's gonna take the money, and we're not gonna bust our balls. We'll find jobs elsewhere, and it'll be fine.
Yep, and we know what to expect.
Right.
So not Robin Hood. There goes my theory.
Not Robin Hood.
Okay.
He's not stealing and giving it to the poor.
That's what I was hoping. I mean, heck, he wasn't in the books at this point, so why not make it dicey, you know?
Dicey?
I don't know. Like Murtaugh, like swinging in, wearing a hood, taking a bow and arrow from the Cherokee and stealing from rich governor.
As sexy as that may be, I don't think that that would be the case. I don't think that would be the case. You know what was actually kind of sexy, even coming from a man here? Jaime talking about Bree and his dream. I wanted your opinion on this.
Mm.
So is this like in the book? Is this something that, you know, they're taking from the original text?
Yes.
Because
it's beautiful.
I got to tell you, it was kind of special, and
yeah,
it's another way that Outlander's getting weird with it.
What?
Well, remember how I said like Outlander?
Yes, in a
show
way that you can handle. Yes.
Like I love when it gets weird. When it gets weird with stuff.
Yes.
Because it separates
itself.
In like
first season magic weird.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, yeah. Like that, you know, and not like, you know.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Not that kind of weird. Like
not that
magical.
Kind of magic.
But, you know, just kind of weird stuff. I kind of like that. The
Me
mystical
too.
Kind of thing. And, you know, it shows a kind of connection that Jaime has with his daughter, one that is like beyond space and time. It's something that he has with her, but I also think it's kind of indicative of Brianna actually coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And Jaime's subconscious is aware of it. I don't know. I like that whole sequence. You know, just even Claire's face when he's talking about it, and her saying, I haven't thought about that in so long.
Oh, how hard was that to hear and to see Claire like loving on it, but also like, my goodness,
mm-hmm.
I miss my daughter.
Right. Right. Excellent stuff. What do you think of Claire operating in the past without Jaime? That's just the montage of the whole thing where she's feeding the animals.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I mean, please, it's what I said was my good.
Oh, that's right.
I absolutely love Little House on the Prairie, Claire. I mean, just so good. You got tired watching her do the monotonous activities of the day. I loved it. You know, it's delivering babies and then trudging through on the horse.
And then playing diplomat, by the way.
P.S.
the Mullers and the Cherokee.
Can someone please let me know, how do they get newborn babies on sets? Like, where do they get these babies from?
Oh, I can tell you.
Where?
It's called Rent-A-Baby. just go right up there. Yeah, I need a 6 week old.
That baby was a youngin. Sometimes when they show newborns, you're like, that baby can talk.
Did you just say nerdborns?
Nerdborns. Sometimes when there's newborns, the babies that they show, you're like, first off, that baby weighs more than, like, I don't know, Blake. You know, like, what's going on? The baby's going to college. But this baby in this episode looked like a real youngin.
Yes.
And I just don't know, like, do they say, oh, my aunt has a niece who has this or that. She has a baby. She'll totally do it. Like, do you pay? Do babies go in SAG?
You have to pay. Like, do they go in SAG?
Seriously, like, how do you get newborns? And who are these parents that are like, oh, it's the middle of flu season. You could totally handle my baby.
Just touch it. It's fine.
Just have all these people like cry over it and speak in German. Go for it. While we're talking about the measles, totes. And
I'll tell you, that shot of Claire as she's riding back, there's a huge, like, there's this big wide shot of Claire on her way home on her white horse in the woods
with Rollo.
With Rollo running after her. And it's like this one big wide shot where Claire is just this minuscule thing amongst all of these woods. And it just shows you how alone she is.
And how grand this new world really is.
Right, right. I loved that shot. Denise Sinovi did a lot of cool shots in this episode. But there was one shot of her that was, it was like the God cam looking straight down. Actually, before that, she enters the cabin and she like shuts the door, and you can just see how tired Claire is. Like, I don't know what the heck they did to Kat's face, but just how tired Claire was. And she just rests her head up against the back of the door. And then she just collapses diagonally on the bed.
Yes, we laughed.
You know, with all of her clothes, like, you know, you've had that kind of day where you're like, dude, F this, like, frack everything. I am tired. I'm going straight to bed.
Something that needs to be mentioned that hasn't been mentioned yet.
What's that?
Jamie's glasses.
Oh, yes.
Just a little bit to remind us, Jamie has aged. His eyesight is poor. Mm-hmm. It's just when he's in town, he's just wearing those little spectacles for just a hot second. And that's it. But I loved how it's just these little reminders of, remember, this is the future. This is older Jamie.
Right.
He still has these pieces to tie in. Loved that.
Well, I do want to get into that. But before we get into those details, the small details that I find are very important that Outlander did in this episode, we just want to thank our sponsor real quick.
Thank you, of course, to Castle Massey for sponsoring this episode. Guys, in addition to their heritage, centuries, and living floral collections, Castle Massey offers a line of truly unique niche fragrances. This line celebrates the true art of perfumery. That's a word, guys. Perfumery. Each piece telling the story of their creation and then performing it for you in the first moment that you smell it. It all started with number 6.
Here comes the general!
Which we all know and love, but their history of pursuing fine fragrance doesn't stop there. It just begins. You see, in 1914, you guys ready? Put on those history hats. Castle Massey made a custom fragrance for silent film star Alla Nazimova that today they call Marim. With dark floral notes with a hint of citrus, this fragrance was made to match her energy perfectly. That is, the energy of a beautiful young Hollywood star, adventurous, strong, and seductive. The LX48 is a cologne fragrance for men that tells a story of Castle Massey's historical retail shop in New York City on 48th and Lexington Avenue in the 20th century. With hints of tobacco and leather, it boasts the sophistication of a mid-century New Yorker while remaining entirely modern. In recent years, of course, Castle Massey has been collaborating with the botanists at the New York Botanical Garden. They're actually creating a line of living florals using the nature-inspired technology we told you about last week. Of those fragrances, two are niche. Both are rose fragrances, one masculine and one feminine. So the men's Ros, R-O-S, is a dark, spicy rose scent derived from a sceptered rose within the garden. And the woman's Beatrix is a more subtle traditional rose scent named for Beatrix Farrand, the landscape architect of the Rose Garden at the New York Botanical Garden. So to experience a true art of perfumery, and for 20% off your order, visit castlemassey.com. Enter that code OutlanderCast at checkout. Don't forget, follow them on social media, guys. Castle Massey for more of their rich history and details about these products and promotions. Perfumery.
So...
Niche little things that we want to pick apart because this episode was so good.
Oh, I know.
Hold okay. on. Here he comes.
Here comes the general.
Ladies what? And gentlemen.
Here comes the general.
The moment you've been waiting for.
Here comes the general.
The pride of Mount Vernon.
Here comes the general.
George Washington.
Here you go, guys. All of you Hamilton fans, or those of you who just want to know who else wore number 6 from Castle Massey. That's right, George Washington. Anyway.
George Washington did. I vowed that I was going to get it in there. I'm going to get it in there.
Okay, niche little things that we just want to pick apart because this episode was so yummy with them.
I don't want to pick them apart necessarily.
Not pick apart in a bad way. Like, pick apart because we just want to savor every... You know what it's like?
What?
It's like if you're a lover of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, which I am.
Yes.
And you actually just nibble around the edges because you want to savor that peanut butter cup for as dang long as you possibly can. You don't want to just bite it in two bites. So you just nibble that segregated edge and then you start to nibble your way in. That's what we're doing, guys. We are nibbling on some bits that we loved.
So there are Outlander is very adept at getting little details right.
I love how fancy you are. Outlander is very adept, and I'm like, it's like eating a peanut butter cup.
Classy broad.
Yes.
But it's also mind-boggling in so many different ways. Like if you recall a couple of years ago when they messed up the subtitles, but like the time and the date in season mm-hmm. 2, we were like, they messed the whole thing up and they're like, yeah, we screwed it up. It boggled my mind. But the details that I wanted to call out in this episode are small things where they really excel, which is like Jamie with his glasses,
yes.
like you said, right?
Yes.
Or Jamie losing his hat. And the pig eating out of his hat. It's just, that's a fun little detail mm-hmm. that you wouldn't normally think of. Like, he's Sasanek, where's my hat? And she goes, well, where was it last when you last saw it? He goes, yeah, if I knew that, I'd be wearing it, wouldn't I? Right? Great little details. Or Jamie putting on Claire's wrap after she puts on the fur.
Yes.
And he just says, oh, here you go. And he just puts it on her. Or even Jamie saying to Murtaugh about Brianna, she lives in the year 1971. Like, you forget that he's still in the 1700s.
Yes.
And, like, his daughter is living 200
yes.
some odd years in the future,
crazy.
Right?
Crazy. It's crazy.
And he looks at it like it's this fantastical thing, which it is, mm-hmm, of course. Mm-hmm. So he says it with this moment of, like, belief, yet serious disbelief, like it's science fiction. She lives in 1971.
I love it.
But here's the issue that I also find with Outlander too. It makes these huge leaps and there's no real like context to it. So Jamie was just laying down the first boards of his house
took a whole episode just to do that.
Right. And then the next episode, the thing is built, it's furnished, it's got everything. And the other thing that I noticed too, the wood was like aged. It was aged.
Stained blade.
It was stained,
they went to
whatever.
Benjamin Moore. Okay. I know what Claire did. She was like, honey, I know what to do. I've seen this on the telly.
I saw Fixer Upper, okay? Trust me, I know what to do.
Can they please come redo our house? Because we've now been here for 2 years and our house doesn't look that good.
We still don't even have pictures hanging up, except for the ones in the studio.
Nonetheless, silver candlesticks perfectly placed above the mantle. Like, our mantle's a hot mess.
Right. Yeah, it's a disaster.
Seriously, how did they get the house together so nicely?
One of the things that I noticed too is like the mantle. Like they had this built out, complete fireplace, and the woodworking on the mantle is not simple woodworking.
So in addition to knitting, All the boys at Lale Brach obviously learn how to build houses and do extensive woodworking work.
They're all master carpenters.
Because I know Claire didn't learn that.
Come on, she can barely knit anything. Never mind going out and building.
Well, Claire can do a lot of things.
Sure.
I just don't necessarily think she spent her time reading Fixer Up.
I don't think she's,
she's not HGTV.
She's
material.
Not watching This Old House, okay?
Oh, that show is so good, too.
It's a huge leap, and like other things too, like they're cramming a lot in a very short amount of time, to get through what they need to get through.
Can I just stay in the house for just one moment?
Sure, yeah.
Guys, did Claire forget that in the 1800s they didn't need streetlights? Because every nighttime scene they showed of the cabin, there's this random bucket of fire outside. Go back and watch it. So it's like, it's nighttime. You see that there's lights on the house. And then Claire, for some reason, decides to leave a bucket of fire outside. Yep. Like a street lamp. Like, trick-or-treaters are coming, and you need to keep your lights on. Why would you keep a bucket of fire on outside your house?
Hey, some people got to see stuff, man. That's how it goes.
No, seriously, someone needs to let me know, because that it happened both times. It was nighttime shots.
But not only that, they got pigs. They got chickens.
Oh yeah, they need to stay fed.
They got horses. They got all this stuff. It's just wow, man. It's just a lot. I would love to know the amount of time that transpired from the end of the last episode to the beginning of this episode. Like, you can pretty much infer that. But it did say that it was in 1768. And we've been in North Carolina in 1768 this entire season.
Well, and also, they were showing such late autumnal photos. Not photos, but like landscapes.
Yeah.
In the previous episode,
right,
where it looked like, okay, it's October. Like, the leaves are changing.
Right.
You know, this is what's happening.
And
so
they did show bits of snow as well. Like, at the end of the episode, Jamie walks up and there's snow on the ground after he's like, hey, I'm home. He's like, oh, what the hell is wrong? What happened?
We just need to, you know what? This is like one of those things that you just say.
You just got
to
let it go.
It's part of the Outlander magic.
Yep.
They're extra amazing house builders and decorators.
Yes.
They somehow know how to, like,
Joanna Gaines. Claire Fraser was the Joanna Gaines before Joanna Gaines.
You know what? Let's be real. Auntie Jocasta actually probably sent her team of interior decorators up.
Oh, yeah.
And said, pimp it.
I'll take care of this, honey.
This just, is your housewarming
gift. You just
gift.
Build your fireplace.
Good job building the frame.
Yeah.
We'll take it from here.
Another thing that I noticed, too, and we were actually laughing about it upon our second rewatch, was Ian.
Oh, my God.
And you know what I'm going to say, right?
Yep.
You know what I'm going to say, which is every time that Ian enters the picture, he comes in, he says a few lines, and they go, all right, Ian, see you later.
Like, they literally will say that to him. They'll be like, all right, go on your way. Then Claire, like, pushes him out the door.
Literally, at the beginning of the episode, literally pushed him out the door. Every single scene, go back and watch. Every single scene that Ian is in.
Yep.
He gets pushed out of, the first one, he gets pushed out, literally.
Yeah.
But he leaves every scene.
He just has to go. So just, even like helping Jamie with the horse, oh, the bit's broken. Well, why don't you go fix it?
Go fix it, kid.
By Ian. So each time Ian leaves, guys, in your rewatches, whether it's last episode, this episode, you know how that whole phrase, like, bye, Felicia?
Yeah.
I want you just to, inside your mind, say, bye, Ian.
Bye, Ian.
Like, Ian, go get us a beer. Bye, Ian.
I tell you, it's true.
It is.
It's totally true. But as funny as a presence as that is within the show, I think a remarkable presence within the show as well is how they've handled Brianna and how they rooted the emotionality. I think the main common denominator throughout all of this that you found in this episode is actually Brianna. It begins with Roger,
mm-hmm.
and it begins with him trying to find her. And then it continues on with Jamie talking about Brianna, with Claire. She's still a presence in their lives.
Yeah.
And later on with Murtaugh, he's talking about Brianna again, saying that there are women, that the women in the future have much more things available to them. And Murtaugh is very happy for Jamie. at a Weehee talking about Brianna, saying she is here, right? The whole thing, and then having the bookending moment of Brianna, and that amazing camera trick of just starting in one end, circling around, and having Brianna out. They made it, I think, very purposely about Brianna for this episode. Mm-hmm. And there's this underlying tension about Brianna, and I wanted to get your thoughts. Do you think that they're doing, from your experience with the book, do you think that they're doing Brianna and this whole process justice?
Yes.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think they're doing a great job. I'm loving Brianna. I'm getting excited. I'm excited to see her journey. And I agree with you. This episode, she was mentioned. She was sprinkled in throughout the entire time. You know, do you have any children? Yes. Do you have any grandchildren? No. Well, you can have my grandchild. And it like hits Claire again. She's like, oh man, I like miss my child, and I'm not going to be a part of her life, and this all stinks. And oh my goodness gracious. And Jamie with the dream, and
yep,
talking to Murtaugh. I mean, it's just like all of this stuff with Brianna and family was hitting home, just reminding you that she's not there.
Right.
Ugh.
That's right. I totally agree.
I'm so excited.
So I love what they're doing. They're making this a very specific point about having a natural inclusion of Brianna, so that when she does show up, it's not just all of a sudden, you know, narratively.
I hope she runs into the pie slut.
The pie slut.
I hope she does.
All right, my darling, do you want to get into the OutlanderCast staff thought of the week?
Yes, I do.
All right, let's get it done. This one is brought to you all the way from Anne Gavin. She is doing this OutlanderCast staff thought of the week. Anne, take it away.
Hello, everyone. So much to love about this episode. But let's get to the elephant, I mean, godfather in the room. Murtaugh Fitzgibbons Frazier. Ah, I was ready to write this man's obituary for the Outlander cast blog a half a dozen times between the finale of season 2 and the beginning of season 3. But oh, how happy I am not to have to bid farewell to this amazing character and equally amazing actor. And while it was good to see him looking so well, man, Murtaugh, you are hot. Age definitely becomes you. Another object of the Outlander lust affection for the more mature, old coot ladies in the fandom, including this one. And what a wonderful reunion between Murtaugh and Jamie. That hearty laugh and hug. Can I have a Murtaugh bear hug too? Adding to bucket list. And bravo to Sam Heughan for all the emotions conveyed in the look, drop of the mouth, and the eyes. And the Claire reunion, all the tears. I have to say, adding the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy tune back to the story as a nod to everyone's most hated episode, The Search, except mine, made me feel vindicated somehow for loving that episode as much as I do. I do worry about the storyline created for Murtaugh's return, as a regulator, things could become quite dicey between he and Jamie. Bravo to the producers for introducing this conflict to the story, but holy taxes, this could get messy. A couple of other quick thoughts. Well done on the homestead, Jamie. I'm not much of a camper, and I really like my 5-star hotels, but even I might be convinced to rent this Airbnb for a weekend in the mountains. Loved Claire's interaction with Adewahi at the beginning of the episode. Anyone else catch the rabbit imagery once again as relates to Brianna being here, as Adewahi pointed out to Claire? Love that. Claire's daily chores, love. I'm an animal lover myself and always appreciated how Diana's novels incorporated so many animal characters. Seeing Claire interact with the Fraser's Ridge Menagerie warmed my heart and also increased my admiration for Claire's ability to adapt to any situation, all while looking stylish and beautiful at the same time. P.S. I want that coat and fur vest. And finally, a nod to Jamie's second sight. This was referenced a number of times in the novels, but lovely to see Jamie speak of his vision of Brianna. Again with the eyes, Heughan. So much emotion. Nice job, Outlander special effects staff, on the Mueller house fire and brutal ending for Mrs. Mueller and husband. Hard to watch, but I think that was the point. Savages indeed, but who was worse, Mueller or the Cherokee? Nobody wins here, but seems to me Mueller got as good as he gave. And can't opine about this episode without mentioning my darling Roger. Oh, Richard Rankin, how I love you. You have mastered the woebegone, painful looks and facial expressions to a T. So much sadness. I just want to hug that woolly, tweety, tightly layered sweet man and tell him it's all going to be all right. Eventually. I could almost hear his heart breaking in a million pieces reading that letter from Brianna. I so adore this couple and Roger's character in particular. I look forward to more Roger Bree moments and for this relationship to grow. But Rick Rankin is absolutely killing it in the role. A better Roger could not be found. I always like to reserve half a kilt point or so, especially this early in the season. But seriously, I can't help but give this episode 5 kilts. Book changes be damned. Bringing back our Silver Fox Murtaugh was the best decision, Ronald Moore. I can't wait to see where his story goes and how he interacts going forward with the Frasier crew on the ridge. Yep, this episode will make it into the double digits of rewatches. Mark me.
All right, Anne, thank you so much.
Thank you. Anne, who, of course, wrote such an amazing piece about Murtaugh.
That's right.
Who's like a huge Duncan fan. So, of course, this was an extraordinary episode.
And also, if you want to go and check out Anne's happenings in Scotland, she also has written the Scotland Diaries on outlandercast.com. Go check them out. You can read all about her travelings and everything that she did over there. If it's Scotland porn. That's what it is. That's what it comes down to. It's Scotland porn. You want to see all the pictures, you want to read all about it. She lived it all, and it's if you haven't gone to Outlander, if you haven't gone to Scotland yet and you just want to have an experience of what it could be like, mm-hmm. check out the Scotland Diaries on outlandercast.com. Okay. But now, my darling, it's time for the Outlandish Theory of the Week. I mean, it's what we're all here for, right? I mean,
no.
It's the reason why people listen to this podcast.
This is the part that I just, like, look at a wall and pretend I don't hear you.
And you say, interesting. All right, you ready for this one?
Yes.
Well, first, we want to let you know that this Outlandish Theory of the Week is brought to you by Minute with Mary.
Minute with Mary is a great place, guys, because you know what it is? A minute with me.
Hi-yo.
Hey, just search the hashtag Minute with Mary. You've heard this probably a bajillion times, guys, and you're like, okay, Mary, I got it. If you haven't yet requested to join my marvelous VIP group on Facebook, just search the hashtag. Come on in. I'm a real-life person. I'm chilling with you. Let's do this.
All right, so my outlandish theory is this. I have an outlandish theory, and I kind of have a developing take. All right, you ready for this? All right.
Sure.
Adawihi seemed to know.
I say Adawihi.
I think it's Adawihi.
You probably are right.
Adawihi. I think. Well, what does
whatever it is, we've butchered it.
I'm sorry. The poor thing, we've screwed it up.
And she's not even here anymore.
She seemed to know what was up. She had visions. She saw death. She knew that Brianna was coming back in time. Yes, when Claire says she is here, it means that, yes, that she is in Claire's heart, Brianna. But I also think that Adawihi knew that Bree was literally coming back in time. Remember, just because we're watching the two timelines, the 1971 and 1768, that doesn't mean they're happening at the exact same time, right? Just because Claire is talking to Adawihi at this one moment, that doesn't mean that at the exact same moment, Brianna is on her way to Scotland or she's on her way to wherever. Brianna could have already come back to Scotland. Just because we're seeing it in parallel doesn't mean they're actually literally parallel. Do you know what I mean, my darling?
Jelly bean, I do.
Okay, good. They don't necessarily have to be parallel when it comes to storytelling. Of course, that may have been the template so far for Outlander, but right now, I think that it's always subject to change.
It's blurred.
Having said that, Adawihi also gives Claire the herbs to help the pregnant lady, the pregnant German lady. And she says, you know, it's for her. And then she mentions stuff about Bree. And Claire says she is here, Adawihi gives her more of the herbs. And I don't think that's by coincidence, because she has this acknowledgement, this smile after saying she is here. She hands over these things. She hands over the herbs. She gives it to Claire. And there's this smile. And I think that Bree is either already pregnant or she is going to be pregnant by season's end. It's an acknowledgement from Adawihi who knows what's up. She knows. She's got stuff. She's getting weird with it, right? Outlander's getting weird with it. Adawihi is getting weird with it too. Also, remember this. Roger, in my opinion, is definitely following her back in time, following Brianna back in time. And you don't know if they've already met up. You don't know any of this stuff because I don't think that the storylines are necessarily time for time parallel. But I think Adelie, he saw this and she knows that Bree is going to be pregnant very soon. And am I going to get an interesting for this?
Well, my favorite part is that you said this during the episode. You're like, oh my God, Bree's pregnant. And I'm like, do you remember?
I know.
Two
I'm
episodes
just saying,
ago.
It still
when
applies.
They didn't have sex, but
still applies.
You know, it is Christmas season, so how about this, Blake? Outlander gets weird with it. Maybe, maybe Blake during the Christmas season, another virgin.
I'm just saying.
Will give birth.
Outlander gets weird with it. Adelie's getting weird with it. So should Brianna. I'm just telling you, either she is pregnant. Or she's going to be pregnant by season's end because she hands her those herbs.
I'm
with
surprised
this.
You're not going to talk about your...
This is my developing take. I know for a fact Roger goes back in time. You want to know why I know?
I know why you know because you made me pause
the
opening sequence of the show.
The opening sequence of the show, there is this shot of a man writing in a book. And underneath the book is a picture of Brianna. It's the same picture that Roger has in this episode that he's showing to Miss Baird. Okay?
Miss.
Yes. Not Mrs. Miss.
Yeah.
Okay? There's different Miss Baird. He's showing that picture. It's the same exact photo. Go back and look at it. It's in the opening shot. It's in the opening sequence of the show, and it's the same one that Roger got when they were at Grandfather Mountain at the games. Okay. Well, this shot is a man with the book writing in it, having this photo, the drawing in his hand, and in the background, it's people in the mud walking around in 1700s clothing. Bree does not have this photo. Roger does. And that photo just didn't show up out of nowhere. It just didn't, you know, energize Star Trek style we didn't go back to the future here, okay? That's Roger. And that's a huge effing spoiler. It's a massive spoiler.
For people who watch the show like you do, Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
I actually didn't pick that out too much. I was just kind of like, meh, meh, meh.
I'm surprised that they...
I love the opening so much with the music that I'm like less paying attention to actually what's physically on the screen and just so excited about the music. But you're right. When you're right, you're right.
Roger
goes to like...
No.
Like a Ren fair where people don't just dress in Ren stuff. They dress in all sorts of stuff.
Listen, he's not going to King Richard's fair, okay? This is going to be a real thing. And he's definitely going back. And they gave it away in the opening sequence. And I'm legitimately... Again, they pay such great attention to details and so many things. And then these other little details are either slipped away or they just... They're big leaps, and I'm surprised by that. But you know, well, you want to know who would agree with me?
Yes.
Charlie would agree with me.
Mock me.
Please hang up and try again.
I have a thing that book readers will want to listen to after this episode. I'm just putting it out there. Just putting it out there.
Just putting it out there.
So if you don't want to be spoiled a bit, you just, after the music ends, after we say farewell, you turn it off, non-book readers. But book readers, stay on, because Blake and I have to talk to you for a second.
Okay.
All right.
I'm allowed to be part of this conversation?
Yeah, because, yes.
Okay.
It had to do with coming up next week.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes.
Right.
Oh.
Right.
Oh.
So if you watched it and you're a non-book reader, you can stay, all right? If you are a non-book reader and you don't watch that, coming up next week on Outlander.
There's just one thing I have to say to the showrunners for this.
Bring it.
Shame.
Seriously, guys.
Wow, you know what they deserve.
We'll talk about it post. Shame. Post music. Let's first talk about the giveaways. Let's talk about the good, merry, wonderful things before we shame.
All right. So
whoever made that trailer.
Oh man, not great, Bob. Not great, Bob. That's what I'm going to say about that. The giveaways that we have for this week, we have already given away last week's giveaways. This one for this week, we have two, once again, from Woo-hoo! Caswell Massey. The first one is the Niche Discovery Sampler containing all of the previous fragrances that we mentioned.
From the perfumery.
From the perfumery. This can be found at OutlanderCastClan.com. It is a value of $90. The second giveaway can be found at OutlanderCastClanGiveaway.com, and it is a choice of a 15 milliliter niche fragrance, which is one of them, the Marum, the LX48, the Beatrix, or the ROS. And it is a $35 value. Just so you know, it does not include the number 6.
Here he comes.
Here comes the general.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Here comes the general.
The moment you've been waiting for.
Here comes the general.
The pride of Mount Vernon.
Here comes the general.
It's Washington.
So it does not include the general for that one. Okay.
Number 6, a.k.a. worn by George Washington.
Yes. So that is that. Again, the first giveaway goes to OutlanderCastClan.com. The second giveaway goes to OutlanderCastClanGiveaway.com. My darling, are you ready to close out this
truly
fully detailed, perfectly realized podcast episode?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Yes!
For all you, for all you Murtaugh nerds.
He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie boogie
bugle baby. Thank you, of course, to those of you who've taken the time to leave us a written review in your podcast app of choice. This helps people who love Outlander, who don't know about this podcast, learn about OutlanderCast. So if you could take a moment to do that, that would be amazing. Huge shout out to Maribel3059, who says, "These are my people." I should have written long, long ago. Did I read Maribel's last week?
That's
oh,
when
Maribel. Nope.
You Trish couldn't P. pronounce TBH.
Yeah, I was like, hold on, Maribel.
Tubaha.
I meant Trish P. Chicago, who says, the Outlander clan is back. I love listening to Mary and Blake's podcast. They are fun, bring interesting perspectives. So fun to savor the episode. So, you know what? Thank you, Trish. And thanks again, Maribel. TBH, I got you. I got you now. All right, and then we want to give a huge shout out, of course, to all of the Outlander cast staff who make amazing things happen, whether it's blog posts, helping out with our social media, our newsletter, gearing up for some really fun stuff coming up in the finale time frame. And we also want to thank all of our patrons. You guys make this possible. You keep Outlander Cast rolling. You make sure that we can have the podcast, the website. Huge thanks, of course, to our highest level patrons, the associate producers of Angie, Carolyn, Celine, Cheryl, Diane, Heather, Jennifer, Lauren, Linda, Marilyn, Mary, Michelle, Patricia, and Summer, as well as our co-producers, Barbara, Carolyn, Christina, Dana, Dieta, Janet, Keelan, Kirsty, Lisa, Liz, Marianne, Meredith, Rainel, Sharon, Sue, Tara, Tina, and Tracy, and last but certainly not least, our executive producers, Ann, Bobby, Jen, Martha, Peg, and Sarah. Thank you guys all so much for just being the rock stars that you are.
And I would be remiss. I would be remiss if I didn't say go to maryandblake.com and check out all of our podcasts that are there, including our currently ongoing podcast about This Is Us called This Is Us 2. Yes, a shameful plug, but I'm quite proud of it.
Quite.
Quite proud of it.
For now, I'm Mary.
My name's Tibba.
And you've been listening to Outlander Cast. Okay, you've been warned. You've been warned if you are a non-book reader. Okay. And if you didn't watch the after the show where it's a little preview for next week, you might want to turn this off, sweetheart. I'm just, yep. There, yep. 3, 2, 1. Where's that shame, Blake? Where's that shame? Are you all here? You guys are here, right?
Shame.
Okay. Let me just talk about this. As a book reader who loves the fact that my husband has not read the books, I mean, we knew that David Barry was coming back, Lord John Grey. We knew it because he's been making the circuits, okay? But geez, freaking Louise, to drop the Willy bomb. Golly.
Yeah,
and to just drop that he's back. I mean, we just had the Murtaugh. It's like we were so excited about all this. And then to just be like, coming up next week, here's some more people you love to see again. It's a big old reunion on Outlander.
How are you? Not great, Bob.
Not great, Bob.
Not great, Bob. Not great. Who made this choice? How do you feel about it?
we need to be careful so we don't ruin things for the rest of the Outlander cast clan. But, you know, we're just going to put up a little thing saying how you feel about this.
Seriously, that was not, I mean, just not good.
Not great, Bob.
I mean, because you just sat there, Blake, and you went, what?
What? This guy shows up with Willy and they're having these conversations? Seriously, dude, I was legitimately floored. How could
you didn't get to savor that moment in the episode, and it came so quickly. It didn't even have like a big warning because it's a freaking trailer for next week. It wasn't even like, so you get the spoiler warning before you have to hear about Carrot, the dang dog. Okay, you get a spoiler warning for Carrot, but you don't get a spoiler warning
for Lord John Grey
and Willy.
Oh my God.
Freaking Carrot spoiler. Come on.
Seriously, like
I can't.
It's just bad. It's just
not great, Bob.
And it made me so upset because Blake, you were like, what? What? I'm learning this in a trailer? And you guys know, we last season actually stopped having you watch the trailers because it really gave too much away.
Right.
It came so quick.
That you couldn't even like stop it. Like you, I don't know.
And the previous ones haven't been bad. They haven't given anything away. They've been quite nice. It's like they're still building their house.
Right.
They're we might have turmoil with the governor.
Like you could avoid giving away the Murta thing, right? Like Murta was a huge part of this episode.
They didn't give this away last week. They weren't like
Murta's back. You know? They weren't dumb like The Walking Dead where they were like, it's Rick Grimes' last episode. But
not really.
Here they are, giving away this major thing. Like, if you're just a show watcher like me, you don't necessarily know that Lord John comes back into the picture. You don't know.
Agreed.
And all of a sudden, they're just dropping this bomb on you?
And Willy! Like, it's one thing to have Lord John Grey. I mean, I still am not okay with either of them being in this trailer, but it would have been one thing to, like, just show his face, but to also show Willy?
Yeah.
And then to be like, oh, Lord John Grey gets the measles. Jamie and Willy go on a little father-son bonding trip that's not father-son bonding trip.
And he's like, oh, they looks like just like you. That's your son, like, isn't it?
Are
like,
you kidding me?
Come on, man. Not great, Bob.
Why are we going to have to watch next week? Thanks for the cliff notes in the trailer.
Oh, man. That was upsetting. That
so,
was upsetting.
Thanks, guys, for letting us vent. Obviously, you know our feelings on this subject.
Well, my love, we should just close it out. Again, just go ahead and say it.
I'm Mary.
I'm not great, Bob.
And you've been listening to Outlander Cast.